welcome to the Unforgiving 60 with your hosts, Ben Pronk and Tim Curtis. Two ex-SAS guys armed with MBAs, seeking out people who are leading lives less ordinary in order to find out how they fill their unforgiving minutes and what helps them go always a little further.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the RV. Tim, for our listeners who haven't been on our journey to date, what's an RV?
The RV is a rendezvous, and it's a point of consolidation, and on our RV, we'll take questions from listeners and also complete some reflection on some of the episodes.
So our first question for this RV is from Mark. Now, Mark has written in to ask whether we can teach initiative or whether it's just innate in certain individuals. Tim, your thoughts?
I think there has to be an environment for initiative. I think, therefore, it can be empowered and perhaps can be taught. But most importantly is the creation of the environment for initiative. And without that, there will be no initiative. I think, you know, you've previously made a really good point about micromanagement. And if we do micromanage, you will absolutely drive initiative out the door. So there has to be this creation of a no-blame environment for people to show initiative. There has to be no fear in showing initiative. And if things don't entirely go wrong because someone go right, if someone has shown initiative, we need to be able to reflect that on a mature and constructive way.
Sure. So potentially jury's still out on whether we can create it or teach it, but we can certainly kill it through micromanagement and punishment of people having a go.
Yeah, I absolutely think that is the case. Second question is from Nathan. And his question is, after listening to your last debrief, I'd like to know if you think there's a difference between gut feel, intuition, and unconscious bias, and if so, how would you tell the difference? Ben?
I reckon they're kind of two sides of the same coin, that unconscious bias is the evil twin of gut feel intuition. And by that I mean we tend to get better, more rehearsed at decision making the more we do them, the more experience we have. So we do develop an unconscious competence and we develop intuition, a spidey sense regarding things that we're deeply expert in. And we develop, on the back of that, things like heuristics, shortcuts to our decision making. These can be very good. They can be very useful because our conscious brain doesn't need to process the information we're seeing. We're making a decision based on weak signals, things we sense because we've done it a lot of times before. However, the line between that and an unconscious bias, where we don't question our assumptions, we don't question whether the situation is different, and we don't question why we're doing things, the line between those two things can be very very thin. It can be a slippery slope towards a situation of unconscious bias where we're not questioning our fundamental understanding. And therefore, I think it's beholden on us as we get more experienced in these things to keep that learning environment open, keep our mind open to alternate perspectives, keep asking, as Dr. Amory Grisogono would suggest, keep asking, how would I know I was wrong about this? And create that same sort of environment we just spoke about, where it is safe for people to play devil's advocate, potentially even build some of these red teaming type concepts into our decision-making processes.
Yeah, I'd separate the two into two packets, the first being gut feel and intuition, and the second being unconscious bias. On the issue of intuition, I think good intuition is about experience, and you build that experience over time. On the issue of unconscious bias, there's a prelude to that bias, because in leading up to a demonstration of unconscious bias, you're far more considered. So you have fallen in love with whatever it happens to be that you're now going to demonstrate a bias about. That's not necessarily the case with gut feel or intuition, which can be less considered. Do you agree?
Yeah.
Or were you listening?
Oh, yeah, sort of.
Another question from Alex. I like this one. It's simple. Which works better, planning or winging it?
Alex, I reckon the answer is yes. I think I've used the Dwight Eisenhower quote, planning is nothing, plans are nothing, planning is everything. But there's obviously a bit of timeless truth in that. I think planning is absolutely critical. Getting on that same page, getting on that same mental model, understanding what right looks like at all levels in the organisation is super critical. So planning, yes. But as we all know, no plan survives first contact with the enemy, von Moltke. Everyone has a plan till they get punched in the face, Tyson. Your plan's not going to roll out exactly as you thought it would. So you need to remain adaptive. You need to be in the position to see what's happening and muddle your way through to wing it. So planning it, yes. Winging it, yes.
There's no point to having a plan if you can't wing it, and there's no point winging it if you don't have a plan.
I like it. And what is a plan, Tim?
A common basis for change.
Perfect.
Another question from Richard, who listens with a notebook in hand.
Yeah, probably to keep tally of every time you say something stupid, Tim.
Well, the tally's out. In fact, if that is the case, Richard, please let us know who says the most stupid things on this podcast, Ben or I. Richard does ask the question. He'd be interested to hear our thoughts on how organisations can best identify and groom individuals who are destined for greater leadership roles, incorporating strategy and foresight, and also on scenarios where an organisation may outgrow the capabilities of the current leader. So maybe let's firstly talk about identification and grooming.
I firmly believe leadership is something that everyone can learn. I don't think it's an innate skill that only a few people have got. However, some people are more likely to have this manifested to a higher level throughout their careers. And I think as we see this within our organisation, then we need to spot that talent and provide additional training and opportunities for that leadership capability to grow. And we work with a number of great organisations, including one who's really taking this by the horns by developing specific leadership programs for those who show the potential to rise to mid-senior level executive positions. And I think that is really starting to take traction and providing that opportunity to expose them earlier in their career to the kind of strategic considerations they're going to need to have by the time they reach those positions.
And that includes talent identification?
Without a doubt.
And it includes a structured leadership program?
It does.
And the leadership program is mostly focused on theory?
Yeah, but with the contextualised for the organisation. So it is designed to provide the theory for the emerging leaders, but with a strong view to look at how they can then apply that in practice within their day-to-day business as usual roles.
And what are the tenets of the package? What styles of things are taught inside that leadership program?
We look at a number of key elements. The idea, and we've spoken about intent before, but really working out what the organisational intent is and then being able to cascade that cogently down to an individual business unit or work area, that's a really important part of this kind of mid to senior level leadership. I think there is a whole piece around the idea of authenticity. So really understanding who you are as a person and being able to leverage off that. But the strengths and weaknesses to achieve leadership outcomes, and then communication. None of this works if you're unable to communicate effectively and in a manner which is going to inspire people, which is going to get them to do to achieve the organisational mission even when no one's watching. That's the key for that more senior level leadership role.
And while theory is necessary,
it is not sufficient.
And so we do bridge across into their crisis management architecture. We take those individuals who have completed that foundation program in leadership. We recognise that not all people are perfectly suited to leading inside complexity and pressure. And those two things are very evident inside a crisis. And so we look at qualities and attributes and teach an additional module to prepare them for leadership inside crisis management architecture, and importantly also bringing that theory into practice. So giving them the opportunity to lead a team, albeit inside a simulated activity, but probably more pointedly, and we've just seen this actually in the last few weeks with this particular client, when an actual incident, emergency or crisis occurs, they've got confidence that that leadership has been developed and proven and practiced and is ready to consider the organisation's best interests.
Exactly. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for those questions. They're fantastic. Certainly they get our sort of minds turning over. Really, we're keen for you to keep challenging us on these very important issues regarding leadership and the practice of leading a life less ordinary. Speaking of which, Rupert Hosking, who we had on previously, a fantastic episode. Tim, what did you take away? What was your key sort of reflection from Rupert's interview?
Yeah, there's plenty of good stuff there. I really like the fountain pen, and that leaders, it's a metaphor for me, that leaders must consider heavily what they endorse and don't endorse, and there is no powerful endorsement than the imprimatur, the sanctioning, the approving, the signing of a document that shows your judgment. I really like that. And I know that insurance companies talk about the weight of the pen and carrying the pen. I think a powerful thing for a leader to have is the pen in the top pocket.
I like it. I thought it was fantastic to hear just how much, and you know, with Rupert's new position as the head of Army leadership, just how much he is looking across the spectrum at developing the Army leadership model. He made the very astute observation, and this again is a Clausewitzian style observation, that the nature of what we're talking about hasn't changed, but the character sure has. And Rupert has engaged really broadly, you know, academic institutions, business schools, top corporates, as that lead man for Army's leadership. He's really looking broadly as to how we can continue to evolve that model to suit the contemporary character of the modern leadership environment.
Relentless pursuit of excellence.
Love it. And Rupert has left us with a final gesture. He's followed up in what the French would call l'esprit de l'escalier. Again, Rupert will be rolling over, cringing as he hears me butcher that beautiful language. But l'esprit de l'escalier is that witty comment that you think of as you're walking down the stairs away from the party. And Rupert's witty comments all to do with the idea of making life choices. And we've got Rupert here to explain a little bit more about that.
So on the topic of dinner party stories and life decisions, here's an example. Back in the mid-90s, I remember thinking to myself, well, hey, I never took a gap year after school. I went straight to ADFA. Every second Thursday since that day, I'd had money in my bank account. No need to worry about employment, really, lodgement, any of those things. Life was pretty good. The army looked after you so well. And I'd been around deployments a few times, but I'd never actually been in the right place at the right time to deploy myself. And I had a real thirst for adventure, and the army at that stage didn't seem to be providing it. And finally, I'd met Rachel, my then fiancée, now my beautiful bride and mother of our three children, life partner, and she too had the urge to travel. So we decided that I would take a year of sabbatical from the army and take 1998 off to go and see the world and do some things. Very much against the excellent advice and well-considered opinion of all sorts of sensible people in my chain of command that thought that would be career suicide and very poor timing. There we were. We did it all. We made that plan. We executed. And a few weeks later, there I was. Everything that I hoped for had actually arrived. I was on sabbatical. My beard had started to grow. And I was working for the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees in Niger, West Africa. And I had a moment that I'll never forget in my life. I was sitting in the back of a Land Cruiser in the middle of the desert in a trackless waste in a place called the Sahel, which is the desert on the bottom side of the Sahara Desert, driving through the desert, heading to some distant location to do some water supply work, car sick, suffering from an advanced form of what I felt was probably dysentery, in a very insecure environment with a lot of banditry around us, and sitting in a car with some interesting but slightly kind of a motley assortment of people, none of whom gave me a great feeling of confidence and safety, and the mission was a complex and difficult one. And I looked out of the window. Oh, and my wife, Rachel, was not able to come with me at that initial stage because it was deemed too dangerous. So my beautiful bride of only 2 weeks before was away on the other side of the world. And I remember sitting there, having this moment, looking out of the window of the car, thinking, my God, you idiot, what on earth have you done? And feeling like I had made a series of blundered decisions that would put me in this awful situation. And it washed over me as a wave of self-recrimination. And, of course, everything turned out perfectly fine. I had a great deployment, did all sorts of interesting things, helped some people, learnt a heap. Rachel then joined me. We had a great adventure together and continued on for the rest of the year. And oddly enough, the Army then viewed this as having been a wonderful career-enriching experience and has sort of celebrated it ever since. And that always comes to mind as a kind of bolder decision, taken for all sorts of the right reasons, definitely on the road less travelled, and it turned out for the best. And having told that story a few times, I thought that's the analogy that'll stay with me forever.
And reflections also on episode 9, which was Rod Bridge, loss, courage, bravery and growth. And actually, Ben, I know I exposed my vulnerability at the start of that episode, and I'd just like to thank you, because I did say to you, I don't think I could get through this one if you didn't carry the majority of some of the questions. The feedback on that particular episode's been quite overwhelming, Ben.
It really has, both through our social media channels, people reaching out, but even, you know, particularly people we know, and I think particularly parents.
Mm.
I don't think anyone has listened to it without commenting and reflecting on there, but for the grace of God, go all of us.
Yeah.
And just what an important thing it is to open that dialogue, have that conversation with your children.
Yeah, some of the feedback I've actually sent to Rod, and it's you know, really moved him, including someone who had to pull their car over driving a heavy trailer because they were crying so hard they couldn't see through the windscreen. Someone who was listening to the podcast while running and had to stop over because they were because they were so emotionally overwhelmed. And look, I think the most important thing is at least we're starting the conversation, you know, starting the conversation between you and I and certainly our families and other families and individuals and students and students and teachers. Mm. And that dialogue, I think, just needs to continue. Yeah.
And I mean, Tim, we speak a lot about complexity, wicked problems, insoluble sort of problems. And if ever there was one, it is this idea of drugs. You know, I think there is no silver bullet. We've had a number of really great feedback about the whole pill testing debate, about how even these ideas of prohibition. And there's obviously no single answer to this, but I fully agree with you that it's important to be talking about this, to be acknowledging it. And as a parent, you know, that dialogue with your children, that exposure to the real dangers of the whole sort of suite of drugs, but in particular these synthetics that are creeping in, super critical.
Yeah, and some really nice feedback, actually, to summarise this before I throw to you for final comment, was we had someone ask, can we please not do another violently emotional podcast next week? It'd be nice to smooth that out a little bit.
Yeah, we'll go back to superficial observations from a pair of morons. Easy, right. We can do that. That's in our wheelhouse. But actually, before we do leave, we've also had some fantastic feedback on the song that we closed out the Rod Bridges episode with.
Yeah, how appropriate was that? And absolutely coincidental that the title is Bridges.
So, and, you know, just to expand a bit more on that, the song was called Bridges, as Tim just mentioned. It's by a young Perth band called Atlas Chasers, who are just phenomenal musicians. I think all of them are a whopper, Western Australian Academy of Performing Arts graduates, absolutely on top of their game in terms of the musicianship. That particular song was written from a young teen's troubled mindset, which is also really poignant for the nature of the episode. The lyrics of it explore the idea of a misfortune or unfortunate relationship, and the sort of continuation and the heavy effect that it can have on either side post this emotional departure. And so really on point in terms of applicability for that particular episode.
Yeah, I sent it to Rod because I really wanted to get his approval before we used it at the end of that particular episode. And he came immediately back and said, there is nothing that is more suitable than that song. He said it brought him to tears.
So I thoroughly recommend checking out Atlas Chasers. They're big on... they are digital natives, unlike us, so big on social media. But yeah, you can definitely find them by looking up Atlas Chasers, a number of their tunes on Spotify. And in fact, I think they're in the studio as we speak, recording another single, which is due for release soon. So get into them, and we'll leave you with a final taste. We'll play Bridges again. See you next time.
Now to the debrief. We relentlessly pursue excellence on Unforgiving 60, and we want your insights and feedback. And indeed, if you know someone who has great insights to share with us that have a practical difference, then get in touch with us at debrief@unforgiving60.com. That's unforgiving60.com. We love speaking to anyone who's been walking on the path less travelled and is generally living the life less ordinary. And if you like the podcast, please rate us on iTunes. You can also follow us on social media. Just search at Unforgiving60, that's Unforgiving60. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube, you know what to do. See you next episode on the Unforgiving 60. All you businessmen, politicians, get around and meet my friend.